This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When you think of luxury items, maybe you think of products like jewelry or cosmetics or cologne. These items are often subject to luxury sales tax because they're not considered necessities. In most states, tampons and pads are also taxed because they are not necessities either. Really? Surprised? Well, you're not alone. In January of this year, 24-year-old YouTube star Ingrid Nilsson posed this question to President Obama during an interview.
And recently, I was shocked to learn that pads, tampons, and other menstrual products are taxed as luxury goods in 40 states. Yeah. And so I want to know, why do these items continue to be taxed?
I have to tell you, I have no idea why states would tax these as luxury items. I suspect it's because men were making the laws when those taxes were passed.
So caring for oneself during the essential, recurring female experience of menstruation is considered a luxury. It is also taboo, even shameful to talk about. But that is beginning to change. Abigail Jones is senior writer at Newsweek, where we found her cover story, "The Fight to End Period Shaming is Going Mainstream." And Abigail, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
I was also shocked, like Ingrid, to hear that pads and tampons are now taxed in 40 states. Which states are working to get rid of this tax?
So New York State is one of the leaders in getting rid of the tampon tax. It has some of the most comprehensive legislation. It's not just about eliminating the tax on tampons and pads, but New York also wants to put free tampons and pads in all public schools, homeless shelters, and prisons. The other thing I would say is that, you know, 40 states, that's a lot. It's the majority of states in the country that right now tax pads and tampons. But in the past year, 14 states have brought legislation forward, plus three cities. And that's actually a lot of change in a short amount of time.
So is this a political issue?
It's a political issue. It is more than that, though. I mean, I would argue that menstruation is one of the most ignored human rights issues around the world. It affects education, the economy, the environment, public health, and periods have been shunned and silenced. And that's for, you know, those of you listening, it's for your daughters, it's for, you know, your teenagers, but it's also for adult women in workplaces. It's for homeless women and the challenges that girls and women face all around the world. But the good news is there are advocates who are working very hard to eliminate the tampon tax. There are swelling social movements. There are finally innovations in menstrual products and organizations working to reach people in developing countries. So this change in the last 12 months, really, 14 out of 40 states bringing forward legislation to get rid of the tampon tax, that is one example among many about how this is finally starting to change.
So what's the argument for keeping the tax?
It varies. In California, for example, there's a bill that was introduced in January to exempt women's menstrual products from sales taxes. Now, if this bill passes, people in California will have $20 million back in their wallets. And if you think about just $20 million, that's a lot of money. But as Assemblymember Christina Garcia, who's one of the people behind this bill, points out, $20 million is the equivalent of just 1/100th of 1% of California's state budget. And so you can see how people can argue both sides. $20 million, that's so much money. Actually, it's not. It's just 1/100th of 1% of the budget. But it is still a significant amount of money to put back in people's wallets. And I'm saying people knowingly because it's not just women who go out to buy pads and tampons. Partners, men, they do that as well. But that is money that would then be funneled back into the economy in other ways. And just to take a moment to speak to the pushback, you know, you said, well, what's the argument for not passing it? Assemblymember Garcia said that when she first started working on this issue, she was made fun of by her colleagues. They called her Miss Flo. Mm-hmm. They called her Miss Maxie. And these are fellow elected officials. Now, she also points out that over time, she got a lot of these people on her side. She now has over 30 co-authors on this bill. But this is a bill that she even says to this day, she can't use the word blood. She can't use the word blood to talk about menstruation. And I said to her, well, what do you call it? And she said, you know, I call it that stuff that's not a blue liquid. Or I remind them that, you know it's not a blue liquid, right?
You mean like the blue liquid that's poured on the pads in commercials to show how absorbent they are?
Yes, the sanitizing of what menstruation actually is, according to commercials.
Well, of course, we can see some double standards here. You know, toilet paper, soap, you know, those are not taxed. They're not considered anything other than necessities. And also condoms, they're given away free in many places, whereas menstrual products are not only expensive, they're taxed. So they take a lot out of the family budget. And you can't even buy them, apparently, with SNAP benefits or, you know, what we used to call food stamp benefits. Is that true?
That's true. And what's so upsetting to me about that fact is, you know, periods are a fact of life. The vast majority of girls and women have periods. It's not a luxury. It's not a choice. It's a natural fact of being a woman. And if you consider what's not taxed, right? In Washington, Christmas tree production is not taxed. Donuts in Michigan. Coffins in Mississippi. Bagged salads in Colorado, and gun club memberships in Wisconsin. I could go on and on. These items are not taxed, but items that every girl and woman who has a period needs to be able to get through her day, they're taxed in 40 states. That's upsetting.
Abigail Jones is with us. She's senior writer at Newsweek and author of the cover story about the fight to end period shaming. We were just talking about the tax on tampons and feminine products in many states where they are not considered to be necessities. Well, Abigail looked into the history of those policies and the products and the attitudes about a very normal part of the life of girls and women of childbearing age. Let me just jump into the history here. 1920s, mm-hmm. when Kotex first came out with sanitary pads on the market. The tampon, invented by a man, by the way, in 1931. Mm-hmm. But in the mid-70s, another breakthrough proclaimed in tampon design, Procter & Gamble released a product called Rely. Let's just listen to an ad when it first came on the market.
Rely is a whole new kind of tampon. So it's a real improvement in feminine protection.
It's really different and better. Look for the magazine ads. They'll tell you all about Rely.
Rely's worth finding out about. After all, it's really a better tampon. Remember, they named it Rely.
Well, that must mean it's better. This commercial is so vague. And I want to get to this kind of idea of innovation or lack thereof inside of this market. What supposedly made Rely a different and better product?
So in 1975, Procter & Gamble began test marketing Rely tampons. They were tea bag shaped, and they were part of a group of tampons called super absorbents. They were made of synthetic materials, and they had a key ingredient that boosted absorption, allegedly so much so that the tampon could theoretically last for a woman's entire period. And I spoke with a couple historians on menstruation and experts who all said to me that they had spoken to people anecdotally who had used Rely tampons in the late 70s, who some of them thought they were fantastic. They enabled them to get through their day in a way that they never had before. Others found Rely tampons very painful to use, painful to insert and to remove. What I think, you know, if you know anything about the history of tampons, you know that there was the toxic shock syndrome crisis, mm-hmm. of the late 70s and 1980. What happened is that in 1980, 890 cases of toxic shock syndrome were reported to the CDC, and 91% of those were directly related to menstruation. 38 women died, and at the time, think about this, at the time of the TSS crisis, 70% of American women were using tampons. And even though Rely tampons had just about a quarter of the market, they were responsible for 75% of TSS cases. So this TSS crisis kind of came barging into the homes of American families. And so, I don't know, you just imagine being a young girl or a mom or a woman using these products, and suddenly this is plastered all over the news, and how that would shake you, your sense of safety, and how do you believe what companies are selling you on? I mean, you know, we just listen to the ad. The ad says it even absorbs the worry.
Well, now consumers are really keyed into ingredients, what things are made of, you know, gluten in their diets, BPA or PFOA on our cooking pans. But tampons, I understand, are unregulated. Is that so by the FDA?
That's correct. The FDA does not require companies to disclose the ingredients in tampons and pads, which...
What's the rationale there?
it's a good question. And I have to say, I interviewed, I don't know, probably over 2 dozen experts. And then I spoke to many, many women of all different ages for this story. The majority of those women, when I said, what's in your tampon? What is it made out of? They either looked at me in a puzzled way or they said cotton. But no, commercial tampons are actually made of some combination of rayon, cotton, and synthetic fibers. And the details of that, we don't actually know. I mean, go to your local pharmacy, pick up a box of tampons, and I challenge you, try to find somewhere among all of that tiny fine print a list of ingredients. Hmm. And in reaction, one of the positive things that's happening right now is that we're getting a whole host of new startups and companies that are putting on the market tampons that are either made of 100% natural cotton or are just organic cotton.
Abigail, I remember reading about this, and you mention it in your article, this satirical hypothesis that Gloria Steinem wrote about in Ms. in, I guess it was late 70s. If men suddenly began menstruating, it would become an enviable, boastworthy, masculine event. And 40 years later, you know, I'm talking with you about this. I clearly, I'm sure a listener can tell from my voice, am wondering, huh? Seriously? Is this still going on? I can hear it in your voice as well. And we even wondered if people would write us and say they're offended by us talking about this on the air. Is it really changing?
I think it is changing. And I think that satire from Gloria Steinem hits the nail on the head. I do think we have evidence of change, and I think it's actually better than that. There's evidence of a movement, which is what my article sought to explain. It's not just a list of successes. It's not just, oh, here are a few examples of states where the tampon tax might change. We have sweeping change in the policy arena. On top of that, we have sweeping awareness that is going on about lack of regulation, lack of knowledge about what women are putting into their bodies. I can't tell you how many women said to me, oh my God, I do all this research. I know where my food comes from. I know what goes into my food. I know where my clothes come from. I know what diapers I choose to buy for my baby. But I never thought about what went into a tampon, which I put in one of the most absorbent parts of my body every month for 30 to 40 years. And so I think that spreading awareness is important. It also comes down to everyday people. I interviewed a mom who told me that when her daughter got her period very recently, she was one of the first girls in her group of friends to get her period. She had just gone to the middle school. I think she started sixth grade. She only had 2 minutes in between classes. And if she had to use the bathroom, she not only had to go to another floor, but if she didn't have a pad or tampon, she had to walk all the way to the nurse's office. So this mom went to the school, and she did something about it. Now that school offers free pads and tampons in every bathroom. She also got the high school to do the same thing. So this isn't just something that is up to politicians. It's up to all of us. It's how we talk to our daughters about what periods are. It's about how we talk to our sons about what periods are. How do boys react to that moment when someone reaches into their backpack to grab out an iPhone and accidentally a tampon flies across the room? That happened to me in my math class when I was in middle school, and it was mortifying. But if boys and girls would react in a supportive way, It would just be a normal fact of life.
Abigail Jones, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Abigail Jones, she's senior writer for Newsweek. You'll find a link to her cover story, The Fight to End Period Shaming is Going Mainstream, for Newsweek, and more of her work. That's on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.